Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
CIO Talk Radio is sponsored by HP Data Center Services, Cloud Computing Services, and Workplace 360 Services. Are you ready for an instant-on world?
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is how to drive effective fraud prevention and detection. And our guests for today's show are Gary McCollum, who is the Vice President and Chief Security Officer at the United Services Automobile Association, also known as USAA. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning, Sanjo.
So is life treating you well? Are you working 20 hours a day or any less?
Well, you know what? In this business and in the environment that we work in every single day, it sure feels like 20 hours a day.
Hey, God bless you. I'm sure things will get better in coming days. At least that's what the hope is, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Great. And we also have Steve Fletcher, who's the CIO and Executive Director of the Department of Technology Services for State of Utah and is also the President of National Association of State CIOs. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
So is life any different? Are you able to play golf and not work as hard?
Well, there's a lot of bad guys out there that are trying to access some of our data. So we've got to keep a vigilant watch 24/7.
Okay, so we should look at what is it that's happening around us as organizations, as nation, as a globe and a planet in terms of cybersecurity and cyber fraud and a regular in-person traditional fraud and see what is to be done going forward at least. Whatever we have done is working to some degree. Perhaps there are some still gotchas and gaping holes. But going forward, what can we do to drive effective fraud prevention and detection? So now when it comes to the increase in fraud, which has been reported every year, there's an increase in the amount of fraud that you see. So are we basically by going the cyber route in the way we have been living our lives and doing business and running nations, is that the one which is causing this increase or just there are more bad people for whatever reason getting churned out and put in the world out here? Gary, what do you think?
Well, I tell you, it's a great question. This is a little bit of a chicken and egg question, but I will tell you from my perspective, and let me first start off by saying, you know, we talk a little bit about fraud at the beginning, but we're going to use the term cybersecurity here, and it really gets back to a subtlety that Steve just mentioned. It's really about protecting data, and it's about protecting financial information, and sometimes we'll traditionally call that fraud, but in the most part, you know, we talk about it in more broad terms. It's about protecting information. Whether it's sitting on servers or whether it's financial credit card information that's in transit, it's really a holistic problem. But back to your question, are things getting worse or is just, you know, are we just getting better at seeing it? And I think the answer is really both. Certainly if you look at our society, we are much more interconnected than we were 10 years ago. We are much more online. You can look at every metric out there. More and more people are turning to online commerce. More and more people are doing online banking. More people are using devices that have IP addresses in their everyday life to live. And so when you look at the interconnectedness and what we're doing to live our lives every day, we're certainly more interconnected and on the net. But at the same time, cyber criminals go where the money is. And this is also where people are. That's where they're sharing information and conducting business. And so I think there is more crime out there, but we're more prevalent as a result of our lifestyle changes.
So, Steve, typically when people talk about a security breach, that means somebody unauthorized actually gets in and steals some information. But whereas fraud is something where a person and or a group or an entity starts leveraging the system, the processes, and or gaping holes in your network to get in there, latch on to that data, start siphoning off money or doing something with that where an ongoing processing is involved and it is done under the radar. So are these not two different type of animals?
The way you described it, I'm not sure that they are different because, and I'll take it from a state's perspective rather than from a business perspective. The states have a lot of sensitive information in their data stores. They have they have financial information, meaning that financial transactions are completed within the confines of their systems, but they also have identity information. And identity information, if you think about it, states have the whole life cycle. They have birth records, death records, social security number, addresses, medical records, all the sensitive information about a particular person. Both of those areas, both financial transactions and identity information, are big business now. If you can make a fraud transaction, you can gain money. But the gaining of identity information can also be sold for money. So you're seeing a lot of identity information that's sold online. You're also seeing a lot of passwords, specialized user accounts that information is sold also as well. And so though all of those things I think are they're fraud, they're theft, they're all larcenous acts that should be prosecuted because they're stealing information through fraud or through theft.
Now, Gary, don't you think that if me as Sanjog sitting looking at everything that I'm doing every day and or perhaps living my life every day, but not know that somebody sold my identity and that super secret password that I had, and somebody is very easily taking out pennies at a time or a couple of dollars at a time from my bank account and I don't come to know it for next 3 years. Isn't that something that might be happening with quite a few people, and we being naive in terms of at least as end users or end customers, we may not watch every penny at all times?
Absolutely. What you're describing is what the financial services industry calls account takeover, and it's something that every financial institution in the world it puts some set of resources at trying to detect and counter on any given day. And it's something that's hard to do because for a lot of reasons. One, the really good cyber criminals out there, they're going to do a really good job at understanding processes, and their goal is to try to remain undetected. And so they're going to try not to do the big bang type of transactions that's going to set off the detection systems and mechanisms out there. And they are going to do probes and small amounts. And so in some cases that does happen. But I will tell you that the financial institutions do invest a lot in behavior and transaction analysis. And so they try to look for the anomalies out there that start to point them to something that doesn't look quite right. But account takeover is a problem.
So do you think that we will have to kind of live with this problem, or do you see in terms of the very detection and then subsequent prevention could be something we should expect that will be coming to our rescue in coming days?
Well, whether you're talking fraud or whether you're talking cybersecurity or whatever, you know, it is always a journey. It is never a destination. Nobody is ever going to say, well, here's the exact tool or the technology that's going to solve this problem, because just as much as the industry adapts to the criminals also adapt to security and fraud controls out there. So it's always going to be a bit of a cat and mouse game. But I will tell you there's a lot to be done and a lot that can be done, but it's a shared responsibility. It's a shared responsibility between individuals as much as it is the organizations and the overall industry and to some extent the government.
So coming to government, Steve, I'm sure you must be living some of these nightmares. So if you were to really inventory perhaps across industry and government, or only for that matter government, where if you were to inventory what type of pattern of fraud that you see more prevalent and in which areas then we could look at what is possible in terms of detecting them and preventing them.
Well, I think what we're seeing in government, obviously, is identity information is the biggest goldmine that cyber criminals are looking for, because states have so much of that. The states have another unique problem in the fact that with the exception of the information that's very protected, what states want to do is make most information available to the public. So we have to very clearly and carefully categorize our information for what it contains. And so we're going to make most of it readily available so anybody could come in and in the spirit of transparency, look at what's taken place or make it available. But sensitive information, obviously, you can't. So you have even a double whammy there. That you can't just build a fence around, you try and build a fence around the sensitive data, but sometimes that's melded in with other data that has to be released. And so I think, you're seeing a lot of effort at trying to protect the sensitive data, and steer it away from folks that, will use it, access it and use it maliciously. But that provides a significant challenge. I think that's where most of the government entities are putting their efforts into place, is to protect that information. So they have to figure out how to separate it, how to understand what your information is, and then what is accessible and who has access to it. And, you know, we're seeing lots of folks trying lots of different ways in which to get access to that, so they can sell it or use it in some really nuisance oriented way. They will a group will steal data, and then they will just and they will target a particular organization and then release all that data just to be a nuisance and to make it so that everybody has to try and figure out what happened to that information.
So, Gary, based on what Steve mentioned here, there could very well be some publicly available information, and then the state could be utilized as a source of information in a malicious way, and then that information that's collected about an average citizen could be used in the private industry. So now when you got different places where a person and or an entity could go to look for data and then leverage and try to use that to attack at a different place, it's like a wild goose chase just to figure it out, where did this whole thing start? How do you handle all this then?
Well, absolutely. I mean, Steve makes a great point. So if you ask me, you know, what are the big fraud trends that we see or security trends we see in financial services, he just touched on one of them, identity theft. So, you know, we are concerned about individuals that would create an account or set up an application with our institution or any other financial institution. And we have to go through a process. Every financial institution has to go through a process to, number one, verify that identity is a legitimate identity, and then to validate the other person on the other end of the line or the other end of the computer that person is who they say they are. And so that's a very tricky process, because there is a certain amount that you can do, and there's some things you can't do to go through that authentication process. But we do see and experience identity theft attempts all the time. The other thing that we see a lot of that's also related to some degree with identity theft is credit card fraud. So credit card fraud is probably one of the biggest fraud areas that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, and it has a lot to do with what's going on in the rest of the world. Just as a side note, the rest of the world is getting away from that magnetic stripe on the back of credit cards, and they've gone to a much stronger form of technology known as chip and PIN. But while the rest of the industrial world has gone to that, the United States is still behind in adopting that technology, and so that's driving a lot of credit card fraud our way as well.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back. And let's look at, while, of course, we to some degree inventoried the problems, but let's also see what are we trying to do? What have we tried so far? What's working? What's not working? What's being researched today without, of course, divulging the classified information? still there is a lot that we have to understand in order to be able to sleep at night, that yes, the people are on the job and we will have some light at the end of the tunnel we will see shortly. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile and connected. To compete, you want data center flexibility so you can adapt quickly to changing business needs while keeping information safe. Introducing Enterprise Cloud Compute Services, HP's solution for managing secure servers, storage, and networks, delivered as a service. Pay only for what you need. Create order out of chaos. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Start shaping your cloud at HP.com.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile, connected, and fluid. Competing in this world takes a special kind of workplace technology that adapts to change, that allows seamless and personalized interaction. Introducing Workplace 360, HP's full lifecycle desktop management solution, delivered as a service. User subscriptions allow you to gain financial control and flexibility. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Visit HP.com for answers.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So let's, Gary, we'll start with you. What do you think we today are trying to do with all the problems that we know about in terms of preventing and or fixing them, and then perhaps finding out a way to be a little more proactive, and what's working and then what's not working?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I think the biggest thing that's happening today is there's a growing level of awareness, and I kind of compare to where things were 10 years ago when I was back in the Department of Defense working in this career field. There was a very low level of awareness, not just within the sector that I was in, the defense sector, but there was a low level of awareness of the threats and the concerns within government and then even at the private citizen level. And so what I've seen is steadily over the last 10 years is just a growing awareness and a recognition that actions have to be taken. So, you know, the first step in any problem-solving situation is awareness of what you're trying to do. So I give good news on that front. You know, I just see a lot more awareness, a lot more media attention on this, which is all good because it raises individuals' awareness. When you ask about what's being done and what can be done, you know, I'm going to refer back to a really interesting report that I just read not too long ago. You're probably familiar with Verizon. Verizon puts out a report every year called the Data Breach Investigations Report, and they do that in conjunction with the Secret Service and some other organizations. And what they do is they provide insights on to data incidents that they've investigated over the previous year. And this one that they've just put out for 2011, you know, it's fascinating because some of the statistics they show are revealing. And one of the things that they popped out was that 92% of the attacks that they investigated were not very difficult. In other words, if organizations just do the basics very well, they have a higher probability of being a harder target than those that don't do it. So one of the things I learned back in my Department of Defense days was before you start talking about really, really complex and sophisticated technologies, you have to put the basic security controls in place, and you have to do those very well in order to build on those just to start to deal with the most sophisticated problems. So I would tell you, you know, the security controls of today in the industry, they're not necessarily sufficient for every type of threat out there, but they're certainly good enough when they're properly implemented to knock away a big chunk of the problems that we're dealing with. And then the third thing I would mention to you is individual responsibility. In the financial services industry, you know, most of the things that impact consumers end up being the liability of the financial institutions because of the way regulations are set up today. And we understand that, and that's the way it is. But when you look at the problem from an end-to-end perspective, an organization, a bank, a financial services organization, they can do everything right on their end. But if the individual doesn't take some responsibility and do some proper security measures on their end, it's going to eventually impact both the institution and the member. And so there is a shared responsibility. And then there are things that people can do from a basic security mechanism. But again, that level of awareness is growing to get people to start doing that.
Yeah, and this is Steve. Let me just follow up a little bit on that. I think Gary stated it very well, but I think we would even put even a more emphasis on this awareness, the citizen awareness, the employee awareness. What are things you need to be doing, as you said, the responsibility? Because we have a lot of awareness training. We have a lot of information on our website to say, be aware of this. Make sure that, you know, you understand how to recognize a phishing site, what it means. Don't open any email that that you don't know who the sender is. All those things that many years ago, as Gary was saying, wasn't there, people have to be aware of, particularly if they're going to be using these online services. You have to know what it means. And I think that's where we started talking about fraud. That's many times how it is perpetrated, is because the user doesn't understand what the environment is, and to be able to take some of those controls or put those things into play. So I think that's a huge part of trying to put controls in place, is making the user, the citizen, aware of what the environment is, so that they can take steps to ensure that they aren't duped or frauded in any way.
Now, this brings up an important point here, because we did other security shows, and everywhere we did give a lot of emphasis on user awareness, and totally agreed that, yes, people should be aware about what environment they're living in, et cetera, et cetera. However, each average citizen, my grandma would not understand the intricacies of the environment either, but they still are going to be doing the transactions, and half knowledge is dangerous. So do you think we can wash away our hands saying that we made our average consumer well aware, and that's going to significantly reduce the probability of them being vulnerable to such threats?
Oh, Sanjo, this is Gary. I absolutely, that's a great point. And I would think Steve would say the same thing, but there's a long way to go. I don't think overall, even if you have a high level of awareness, I don't think overall that collectively industry and others have not done a good job making security transparent and inherent in the systems and the technologies that consumers are using every day. Typically, security is an afterthought. It's been a bolt-on and a complex thing that people have to worry about, and most of the time they don't have the time nor the knowledge to deal with it. My mother-in-law is a great example that you sort of just brought up, your personal experience. I have an experience with my mother-in-law where she had a computer, and she didn't know too much about it, and she said, "Hey, could you take a look at that?" And she goes, "It's not working very well." And when I took a look at it from a security perspective, patching wasn't turned on, antivirus had expired. There were several issues with it. She wasn't running a firewall, things that, from a security perspective, you would automatically think to look at. And I kind of mentioned those to her. She says, "Well, I don't care about any of those things." I said, "Well, Mom, what do you use this computer for?" She goes, "Well, I use it for banking." And so
that's exactly what I was referring to.
And that sort of highlights the problem. So you do have to take a very methodical, basic approach to educate people and give them tools and knowledge so that they can act on it. And I'll tell you, one of the ones that we do on the financial services, and many banks do this, we highly recommend as a first step to members and consumers, you should use a different password than you use for your social media and your online activities than you do for your banking account. Keep a separate password just for your banking account and make it really, really strong. Start off by doing those little things like that. Start to build on what I think is a level of education and awareness out there today that you can work with, right? So that by itself is not too hard to do. And just by educating them on the fact that, if you use a different password, you're going to really make it harder for the bad guys to get into your banking account if they've compromised your password some other way.
Now, with that said, Steve, so now again, I will reiterate this point. So we still took the ownership and the onus of making the fort secure and prevent and detect timely the frauds to some extent or to quite an extent on the end user versus us being able to, as organizations who are safeguarding that data or expected to safeguard that data, to really step up to the plate and say, I will take care of it. So is this a mindset or is this the best we could do?
I think that there are lots of very, very strong controls that can be implemented. I think the banks in particular have done an excellent job of really making things more and more secure in order to protect their data. But as Gary has said, you know, the technology, everything is evolving and the awareness is evolving. And you always have to balance that against the business and being able to do business functions. Because the most secure system is one that is never accessed. That means nobody will be able to get at it. You'll never breach it because nobody accesses it. Although from a business standpoint, that's really, really difficult to justify. I got a system that nobody can access, but is very, very secure. So you're always in that balancing act. And the business said you can't constrain our citizens or our users too much because, you know, if it takes you an hour and a half to do your business at a bank, just to log in, verify, do your retinal scan and so forth, then that becomes counterproductive to the business. So you're always doing a trade-off in that regard. So I guess I would say there's lots of great controls out there. And as Gary illustrated, we ought to do the basics first because those generally cover most of your activities. Nevertheless, you can make them as strong as you would like, even down to some really, really detailed biometrics activities in order to verify who that person is and so that they can get on. Those happen to be fairly expensive, and they're not necessarily available to everybody. So, again, it's the trade-off for how much security do you need for your business according to your business rules, and how you're going to implement that is one of the great debates that takes place every day in modern America.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back. And Steve, to your point about the trade-off, Gary, when we come back, we'd love to start with you and talk about how do you differentiate between the acceptable risk definition that a consumer has in his or her mind and an organization which has got a responsibility to, you know, secure that. So if we say that the trade-off is required because at some point it becomes an overhead, but when somebody's dollars and their years of earning and or their whole livelihood is at stake, is there something known as an acceptable risk that somebody is willing to have? We'll explore this when we come back. Please stay tuned.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile, connected, and fluid. Competing in this world takes a special kind of workplace technology that adapts to change, that allows seamless and personalized interaction. Introducing Workplace 360, HP's full lifecycle desktop management solution delivered as a service. User subscriptions allow you to gain financial control and flexibility. The Instant On Enterprise is here. Are you ready? Visit HP.com for answers.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile and connected. To compete, you want data center flexibility so you can adapt quickly to changing business needs while keeping information safe. Introducing Enterprise Cloud Compute Services, HP's solution for managing secure servers, storage, and networks, delivered as a service. Pay only for what you need. Create order out of chaos. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Start shaping your cloud at HP.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So, Gary, based on Steve's last comment about we have to make trade-offs, and rightfully so, because at some point it will become cost prohibitive for it to remain a business proposition. But then when you look from a consumer standpoint, they do not typically want to listen to this concept of acceptable risk when their livelihood and or their savings or their daughter or son's education funds are at stake.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I would tell you, trade-off decisions get made by individuals and organizations every single day from a risk perspective. When an individual gets in a car and they drive somewhere, they make a decision whether or not they're going to put the seatbelt on, et cetera. And it's not a whole lot different on the security side of the house. Organizationally, I think you asked the question is, you know, how does an organization make those risk trade-offs? And it's always a balance, because if you had unlimited resources, it wouldn't necessarily be, you know, a big hard conversation to have and a decision to reach, but no organization has unlimited resources. But it really starts with, you know, with the individual organization, their mission and their core values. And for us, in the business I'm in, it's about trust and confidence of our members. And so we have a very low tolerance for risk when it comes to trade-offs that would impact our members and protection of their information. That being said, there's lots of things from a security perspective. If I could wave a magic wand that we would like a member to do if they're banking online with us or any other financial institution. But some of that technology is not necessarily as user-friendly as it needs to be today. And so going back to a point that you made, if you put a lot of security controls in place or impediments for somebody to have to work around, they either won't use your product or your service, or they'll bypass the security controls and create more risk. And so it really is a balance between the end user experience and the organization's mission on a day-to-day basis. And that can be a difficult conversation at times, but it really is rooted back in the mission objectives of the organization.
Now, we know that we have been trying to secure the fort, but are there any chronic vulnerabilities that exist which you think a fraudster might want to capitalize on? Steve, what do you think?
Sure. There's and probably one of the biggest vulnerabilities we have is the well-intentioned employee who knows what the acceptable use policies are, that has then determined that they want to take some work home with the assumption that they're going to be a good employee and work at home and get some extra work done that they weren't able to accomplish during the day. They load that work onto their laptop. They go home, and on the way home, their car is broken into and the laptop is stolen, and all that information with all that sensitive data is now in the hands of somebody whose it shouldn't be. Now, all those things it was a well-intentioned employee, and they were actually trying to do some overtime. However, they violated the acceptable use policy and how they protected that data. And I think that's where you see the vulnerabilities are where employees don't follow the rules, they don't follow how things should be portrayed or protected, and they don't take steps to protect their password. They don't take steps to, as citizens, they may not understand all the controls that Gary pointed out. And those are the most frustrating breaches that you have, is for people not being aware, people not paying attention, and people not following the rules. I think that's where much of our fraud has been perpetrated, is through compromising those either uninformed or even well-intentioned citizens and employees.
Now, Gary, if for any organization, when we look at this whole department of so-called fraud prevention and detection, suppose it was a department, is there a blueprint of where they have to go? Is there a defined roadmap? And is this a truly planned activity versus more seat of the pants? Not exactly not seat of the pants or ad hoc, but a little more played by the ear because we are kind of maneuvering in the dark.
Yeah, absolutely. Any financial institution, there's not going to be a cookie cutter approach. It's going to be based on an architecture. It's also going to be based on requirements. So, for example, if you're going to process credit cards or issue credit cards, you got to be compliant with the payment card industry security standard that's out there. And there are certain things that you have to do and have to have in place. But holistically, what the secret sauce is going to be is that particular organization's architecture, what they're doing from a business perspective in terms of products and services and the channels that they interact with, and what is the overlying systems, the people, and the technologies that overlay on top of that architecture to support anti-fraud, and detection efforts.
Yep. Now, you mentioned about security standards. Do you think if the security and a fraud prevention and detection standards were being followed to the T, or if we are indeed following them to the best, our best possible level, and still we do not see any, stop or you can say slowing growth of fraud, that means there might be a flaw in the very standards. Do you think we can make that assumption and or draw in this inference?
No, I think that standards have to evolve. They have to evolve over time as well. But I will tell you, I'll go back to the Verizon data breach report. And one of the statistics they put out in this year's report, they said 89% of the victims that are subject to payment card industry security standard, for example, 89% of those had not achieved compliance. And so, so you can tell if you do the things that you need to do and do the basics well and take an end-to-end approach, you will be a very hard target. You're not going to stop all the problems. You're not going to eliminate fraud, but you will have a very strong system in place to work with and build on.
And to follow up with that, I think what Gary said is correct. And what you also do is you are creating a culture of security. And once you do that, you have folks that are really paying attention to the new methods, the new ways in which you would compromise a system, and so your whole team is looking for that. And so you do, while it's a struggle to keep up, you have your whole team is paying attention to that. They are looking at the ways in which it is evolving, how they are attacking you, how they are looking for ways to breach your security. And I think once you implement that, you have a whole, I would say, a culture of security throughout your organization. And that's kind of what will help you fend off a lot of these new attacks and as it evolves as you go forward. But if you don't have that culture of security, there's lots of places where you're not paying attention. There's, a development server that's out there that's unprotected because you don't have that whole culture to pay attention to it.
Now, when we do talk about the entities that have to come together in order for them to deliver the required level of security and perhaps the fraud prevention and detection capability, they may not always be running at the same speed, right? If they are two wheels of a bicycle or the rear two wheels of a car, if they are spinning at different speeds, God bless us, what's going to happen to the car? So what do we do here so that all wheels are spinning at the same speed with all the different entities involved? Is that even realistic for us to claim that it's happening right now as we speak? Steve?
I think in some areas it is, in some areas it isn't, and it's kind of the culture that I was talking to. But I think that there's I think it goes beyond your immediate organization, because at some point you need some intervention by law enforcement. I think that some of the other entities that you might want to bring in, I think banks do a phenomenal job of kind of backstopping some of your financial transactions so that they have controls in place so that if you are perpetrated, that they can, it typically goes to another bank, and they have some great controls in place that they look at. And so getting help from financial institutions, from law enforcement, from your policy folks, from government, all are important in order to be able to make sure that all wheels, as you say, are going in at the same speed, so that you can have, again, you layer your security protection. Those are all parts of the layers that are tools that you can use.
Now, Gary, with all the different examples that we have or the answers we got during the show today, financial services looks like a hero where they have really aced it and are able to do whatever they have to do in order to have the right controls in place and be able to prevent fraud and perhaps detect proactively. With that said, there are so many other industries that we work with as individuals or as institutions, maybe insurance, healthcare, transportation, et cetera, and everywhere we in some form or fashion divulge some of our identity information and perhaps even financial data. So are financial institutions supposed to be the final cops who are going to detect after the fraud has happened at these other entities which are not as safe and secure because they may not have the right directives in place?
Well, it's a great point. Steve made the point as well. I would just say the ecosystem out there on the network, and it is an ecosystem, and it's individuals, it's organizations, it's different sectors, and it's different agencies. It's an interdependent team sport, and you know, I think the financial services industry has done a very good job with security and anti-fraud. However, you know, nobody's complacent, right? Nobody thinks that, well, we've got it licked, because we see how adaptable cyber criminals are. We see how adaptable the threat is. And so it's a continuous state of evolution. Oftentimes, much of what happens somewhere else in the ecosystem out there does end up in the financial services industry, because that's where the money is, but not all the time. And so I think that different sectors are in different states of evolution and where they're at. The government is talking a lot about what are we doing as a nation and as a society to protect our critical infrastructure, whether that's the power grid, whether that's the transportation industry, you name it. There's a lot of focus on that. When I look at things like healthcare, there is obviously a correlation there to what the financial services industry is doing with the evolution of electronic medical records and the implications there, protecting personal identifiable information and health information. So there's a lot of interdependencies, and I would tell you it's a journey, and no one sector has got it licked.
Now, with that said, if we were to say that we are not 100% dependent on just computers. I mean, we can make the computer smarter, and we can keep going with that crusade. However, the people are the ones who are handling these computers. So do you think we need smarter people going forward in order to run these even smarter computers? Or people are the weakest link? But before we get into it, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile and connected. To compete, you want data center flexibility so you can adapt quickly to changing business needs while keeping information safe. Introducing Enterprise Cloud Compute Services, HP's solution for managing secure servers, storage, and networks, delivered as a service. Pay only for what you need. Create order out of chaos. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Start shaping your cloud at HP.com.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile, connected, and fluid. Competing in this world takes a special kind of workplace technology that adapts to change, that allows seamless and personalized interaction. Introducing Workplace 360, HP's full lifecycle desktop management solution, delivered as a service. User subscriptions allow you to gain financial control and flexibility. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Visit HP.com for answers.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So we have this so-called trick question where we are trying to make us better in terms of preventing and detecting fraud. And the premise is, since the technology is becoming smart, but the people who are to use technology or manage this technology, if they remain not as smart, then it's going to be not going to provide us the end result. So, Gary, do you think we need smarter people as a user and or as the people who manage those technologies in order for us to reach what we the holy grail that we are striving for?
Yeah, I think on the end user side, the end users deserve to have security more integrated into the products and services that they're buying, so they don't have to think about making decisions about how to configure a firewall or how to make a particular security setting more secure on their browser. I don't think they should have to worry about those, so I think security needs to be better integrated into products and services. And then the end user has to be a little smarter about what they do on the network and how they interact with it. On the organizational enterprise side, I definitely think that you have to have a workforce that's more skilled and evolves with the technology. You don't need a bunch of people that are really experts on mainframes and from a security perspective as much as you need people that understand mobile technologies today. And so you have to be able to, I think, evolve your workforce and the skill sets with what's going on the technology side, or you're going to be very quickly behind the security power curve.
Steve.
I would agree with that. I think you need a combination of both things. The user needs to be aware. He needs to be understand the environment that you're in and the threats. But you do have to make technology easier for them. And there's a lots of vulnerabilities in, say, for instance, browsers. All right, but the browser that generally comes with your machine, it is what it is, and so trying to get a specialized browser or something that would be very secure is kind of a pain in the neck for most users to be able to do online transactions securely. So there's got to be a better way to integrate that, to make it so that you don't have to understand all the technology, but it is available for you easily so that you can use it. So I would agree with Gary on that.
So question is here that security typically gets, I would not say in all cases, but in many cases gets a stepchild treatment when it comes to budgeting, because we are not able to always show a tangible ROI. And that's why we are told that you're kind of selling insurance or selling fear. With that said, if you as a business need to be making your consumer or the end customer warm and fuzzy, you got to be able to figure out a way to connect that to the type of investment required for us to be able to prevent the fraud and detect fraud, because otherwise the lawsuits and other things that you will pay money anyways could be far bigger bill that you'll end up paying. So, Gary, what is the business case that you make, and what battles do you think your counterparts and you have to fight in order to make sure that you're able to invest adequately?
Well, you asked a great question. On the fraud side of the house, since I own both the fraud team as well as the information security team, you know, it's sort of almost two different hats, but really at the end of the day, it's just one hat. It's my hat, and that's the case that I have to make. You know, it's on the information security side of the house, we'll typically talk about, the decrease in risk. We'll put the ROI discussion in terms of decreased risk and also some avoidance of regulatory concerns, because there's some things that you have to do. On the fraud side of the house, it's much easier to show a business case ROI because, again, you know, fraud typically deals with real dollars being lost or going out the door. And so we have a much better connection between our systems on that side of the house and the sort of impact they can have from a business case perspective. So my challenge is, how do I integrate all that into a cohesive story during the budgeting and the strategy process? But it can be done.
Steve, if you feel in the government, especially when dollars are few or fewer in terms of as an overall IT budget, do you get a special sanctions for the security and fraud-related investments you have to make?
I would like that, but it's kind of sad. Sometimes in the security world, you got to have dead bodies before people pay attention. You got to have some significant breaches before they say, "Oh yeah, I guess we ought to pay attention to this." But on the other hand, in a political arena, that's really not a good thing either, because that generally means loss of somebody's head who's responsible for that. So it is always a fight. But I think that we've gotten in government to the point where we can say, now wait a minute, this is really a bad thing that's going to happen if we don't protect it. So we do need to spend some money on this as part of our overall systemic approach. We got to have these controls in place. So any new project that's coming up, we have to say, here's the issues. From a business standpoint, we have to reduce our risk here because we can't have this data being perpetrated, and that really is how you you state your case. But nevertheless, it is there's a huge education process that has to take place to say, no, you really want to pay attention to this, and we're going to have to spend some money here because this is very, very sensitive information, and it's, as you say, you kind of scare them a little bit to say you really want to do this because you don't want your name in the paper as somebody who neglected to put a proper control in place.
Now, these frauds are to some extent being created because we introduce technology, and when we talk about technology, the IT departments come on the spotlight. So, Gary, do you think you are able to say, I'm not responsible for it, if at all fingers get pointed on your group? And what do you think about the rest of your counterparts doing in their respective companies?
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a little bit dependent on organizational structure in companies and a little bit on organizational culture, right, in these different companies. At this particular company, the security function is separate from the IT function. We have an excellent working relationship with the CIO, and at the end of the day, I know that our CEO would say, you know, everybody's business is about protecting information and ensuring the trust and confidence of our members. So I think I live in a little bit different world, but I would tell you it's probably different company to company to some degree.
And I would say from a government standpoint, we kind of have to partner with the business because the business is the steward of the data. The IT department and the security department is the executioner of or they execute the policy according to the business, and they kind of have to work together as a team to go forward. Then the IT department has to kind of tell them, or the security department has to tell them, all right, if you make these decisions, this is what the impact is going to be. If you don't spend the money there, you are going to be exposed, or the risk is going to increase. But you have to partner with the business, because the business is going to be the one that's going to set the rules for who has access to the data, how we protect it, and how we use it in our normal course of business.
15 seconds each. What do you think you would like to appeal to the individual consumer organizations and government in order to get them a better assurance against the fraud that is happening all around them? Steve.
Two things. One is better awareness from the consumer industry, and I think that that is taking place, but it's continual training. The other thing is working with law enforcement, they've got to be empowered to be able to go after those bad guys, so that would be a huge deterrent also if they thought that if there was more effort to be, or if there was more a penalty that was going to be imposed for perpetrating these frauds.
15 seconds, Gary.
Yeah, ditto on the first one. I would encourage individuals to, whether they're banking or social networking, whatever, take the time to at least understand to some degree what are the privacy and security capabilities of that particular interaction that you're having, and at least take time to understand it and do the minimum. Organizationally, I would say, it's a team sport. It's a share information sharing opportunity with others within your sectors and law enforcement, and also to focus on doing those fundamentals well.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, thank you so much, Gary and Steve. And the questions here were around how can we drive effective fraud prevention and detection, and it looks like it is supposed to be a team sport, as Gary, you rightly said. Everybody needs to get involved, and perhaps we will see a little more secure and a little more fraud preventing type of proactive environment that we will all start living in. Thank you so much again. Please send us your thoughts if you have any questions to views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.
CIO Talk Radio is sponsored by HP Data Center Services, Cloud Computing Services, and Workplace 360 Services. Are you ready for an instant on work?